You can go ahead and take your Bibles and open up to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. That's where we'll be coming from today. And it is good to see you all here. Man, I missed being able to speak with you last week, but Pastor Shannon did a marvelous job sharing with our response to catastrophes, with our response in a fallen world when evil things happen. And I felt that God was leading us to go that way last week, and so we went that way. And I was delighted to see God speak through him the way that he did. But today, we're going to begin our wrap-up on our stewardship series. Now, we've been going through a stewardship series for some weeks now, and each two messages was actually one message. And so they've come in pairs, if you will. And the first two messages were dealing with the fact that we've been entrusted with much from God. That God is the author of everything and he's the giver of all. And everything that we have is from God and he has entrusted it to us. And the second two dealt with the fact that we now have an opportunity to be invested in the things of God. We've been entrusted with much from God and we have an opportunity to be invested in the things of God. And you will be invested somewhere in something with the things that you have. And either you're going to be invested in something that's of value or you're going to be invested in something that's not of value. And what God has called us to do is to invest into his kingdom. And it's been a great pause, a great opportunity for us to stop and realign our thinking and lives with what God says. Because ultimately, isn't that our desire as believers of Christ, as children of God? Isn't that our desire that we would be conformed into the image of Jesus Christ? As we've been going through the Joseph study on Sunday nights and on Wednesday nights, it hit me. Man, Joseph was a great man of God. Why? We talked about it Wednesday night. Because he was a great man of faith. And that faith completely transformed his attitude in everything that he encountered. His attitude was such that it glorified God, whether he was in the prison cell or whether he was in enslavement. And I thought about that for a second. And I said, oh, God, I'm not even doing a great job of being transformed into the image of Joseph, much less Jesus. I need you more now than ever, God. And that was my prayer through the study that we've been going through, is that, God, that you would begin to change my faith, that I would be able to see and step out on things that you would have me see and step out on, and that you would begin to transform my attitude and my heart and my whole outlook as a result of that. And you know, when we look at stewardship, this is one of the greatest testing grounds that we have when it comes to our attitude. When it comes to whether or not we're going to walk by faith, whether or not we're going to agree with God and his ways that are right, or whether we're simply going to say, you know what, we're going to hold on to what's mine, not realizing that it's actually God's anyway. And so today, after we've seen about being entrusted with everything from God and being able to invest those things with God, today we're going to see that we are being tested. You see, every day brings a great test. Every day is a test as to where your allegiance is going to fall, where your time is going to be spent, where your resources are going to go. Every day is a great test on whether or not our investment is going to follow our faith or not. And that investment has to do way more than just with money. It has to do with every aspect of our life, where we start our day, how we finish our day, and what we do in the midst of our day is a great test as to who has our allegiance. And it is in everyday decisions that we show what we truly believe. And so as you are on 2 Corinthians chapter 8, begin in verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So we urged Titus, that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. As we read that, it's come to my mind that I was tested with Noah's Park, and do I need to release Noah's Park, or have they already gone? They left, okay. Good. As we read that first part, though, there's some things that we're going to walk into today about the testing that the church in Macedonia went through and how they proved where their allegiance lay. And also how the testing has touched Corinth. And Corinth is kind of pulling back. Have you ever heard of James Whitaker? I'm sorry. Let me get it right. Jack Whitaker. Does that ring a bell? Anybody ever heard of Jack Whitaker? You're not married to him, anybody in here, are you? Jack Whitaker won the largest payout of the lottery ever rewarded to its time. He and his wife bought the ticket, got home with the ticket, the drawing was made, and all of a sudden Jack and his wife looks at the ticket and cannot believe that they had won over $300 million in the year 2002. They took that $300 million that they won, and they began to do some good work with it. Matter of fact, Jack is quoted as saying, I can take the money, I can take this much money and do a lot of good with it right now. That was his heart's desire and his wife's heart's desire as they won $300 million and were entrusted with that. And immediately they gave $15 million to build two separate churches. But soon what happened in Jack's life is he began to experience greed all around him. People began coming, of course, with their hand out, wanting a little piece of the pie that he had been given. He owned a company, and that company was a small, modest construction company. And in the midst of winning this lottery, people found out he owned this company. And lawsuits began to stack up against this company right and left as people were trying to get some of his money. And he quickly had over 400 legal claims against his company in a short matter of time. And the legal fees alone cost him over $3 million. In the midst of this, he became so devastated that he turned from his faith and turned to the bottle. Began drinking heavily and wasting his time and his life. He had a granddaughter who was the apple of his eye. Her name was Brandy. And he loved her so much and he wanted to bless her so much that he began giving her things that she might not have been ready for. She was only 17 at the time. And he gave her $2,000 a week and said, here, Brandy, here's $2,000 for this week. And next week there'll be $2,000 more. Go and enjoy that money and do with it what you will. And during that time, he bought her four separate cars. The money and the cars, though, attracted the wrong kind of crowd. All of a sudden, you have a 17-year-old with more money than they know what to do with, and cars more than you can drive one at a time. And people started coming around her just for what she had. And soon, Jack's granddaughter, Brandy, the apple of her eye, was hooked on drugs. By the time 2020 interviewed Jack Whitaker, his quote concerning his granddaughter was this: she does not want to be in charge of the money. She does not want to inherit the money. She just looks for her next drug. Whitaker quoted her as saying, Paw, all I care about is drugs. Well, soon in the midst of this wrong crowd that it attracted and the cars and the money that she has and living a wild and reckless life with those friends, her boyfriend soon died of an overdose. And his family could only do one thing in their view, and that was to blame Brandy for introducing him to that lifestyle and bringing those things into his life. And so they began to blame Brandy for what had happened to their son. And while trying to help Brandy overcome this, as Paul was doing, one day she just disappeared. And they began a frantic search for her. And they found her body December 20th, 2004. Just 2 short years after Jack Whitaker won $300 million. His life was devastated. His granddaughter was dead. Oh, and by the way, that's when his wife walked out. It's a tragedy. Jack says, "My granddaughter is dead because of the money. She was the shining star of my life, and she was what it was all about for me. From the day she was born, it was about providing and protecting and taking care of her. You know, my wife, she said that she wished we had torn up that ticket. Well, I wish that we had torn that ticket up too." You've just heard one of the most tragic stories of the fact that money is not the answer. It is not the answer, no matter how much entertainment industries and different people put it forth in front of you, that you just got to get all you can and can all you get and sit on the can. You know that saying by now. It's not the answer, though. The misuse of money robbed Jack Whitaker of the truly important things in life. Do you think money's the goal? Look at Jack. No. Do you think possessions are the key? Look at Brandy. They're not. Do you think power is the attraction to life? Be very careful. If these are your gods, then these things will rule your life. They will become all-consuming in the midst of your days, and you will know very quickly where your allegiance lies with the decisions that you make in those days. Jesus taught us that you cannot serve both God and money. He said you will love the one and hate the other. You can't serve God and money at the same time and have your allegiance fall both ways. Your allegiance must be dedicated to where your heart is. And if you're serving God, you will use what you have for His kingdom. And if you're serving money, you will use what He has for you. Jack learned a hard lesson that day. Money is not significant. It's not of any significance. But our relationships are. And it is your relationship to God and to people that will determine all of your eternity. Think about this. When Jesus was cornered by the Pharisees and said, "What's the greatest commandment?" His answer was, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself." It is your relationships to God and your relationships to people that's going to determine all of your eternity. Not your relationship to your bank account. Not your relationship to your car. Not your relationship to your house and the community that you live in and whether it's gated or not. But it's your relationship to God and to others that's going to determine everything there is to determine about all of eternity. Now, you did not hear me say it's evil to have possessions in this life, but it is evil to use those possessions for an all-encompassing God, and that is self. What's right is to say, "God, this is all yours anyway, and you've entrusted me with it. Now let me invest it back to you." And that's why it's critical that we understand how important the uses of our possessions are for the here and the hereafter, for others as well as for ourselves. Paul is teaching this to the church of Corinth. What we just read is on this very subject about how they're using what God has given them. And he's teaching them these truths, and he shows that earlier they had begun the job of building the kingdom, and they had begun well. And now he's urging them to complete it. You see, the church has a responsibility not just to begin a work, Not just to get excited about something and get gung-ho and say, we're going this way. The church has a responsibility to first and foremost, before they ever begin anything, to hear from God about that thing that they need to begin, whatever that work is. And once the church has heard from God about that, then they begin following Him and following Him to do that work. You see, God is the one that still does the work. We're just still the follower. And as we've heard from God and we follow Him in Him doing that work, there's completion that must be a part of it. When's the work finished? When is evangelism done with? Is that a work of God? Did He call us to evangelize? And is He the one that empowers people to evangelize? Is that a work of God? That's a yes or no question. You can't answer that. I promise you I won't get ugly. Is evangelism a work of God? When is that done? When is that finished? When is it complete? When He says it is. Everything that God has called us to do, He is the author and perfecter of it, and all we do is follow Him in and through it. But we must know where He's going in order to follow Him. And these truths and this message to the Church of Corinth about what they have begun and what Paul is urging them to do, they're not just for the church. They're not just for Corinth. They're not just for Central. But they're for each one of us. You must see yourself as a manager of what God has given you for His kingdom. And so that brings me to the first point I want to pull out today. As a Christ follower, generosity should be a natural outflow of my life. As a Christ follower, generosity should be a natural overflow from my life. When you look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 6, moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God. What's the very first subject we come to there? I guess subjects throughout where it's the first thing that jumps out to me anyway. And it's not about the brethren, but what we read in verse 1 is about the grace of God. And what He's highlighting here is the grace of God. Oh, this is going to be good. He's talking about the grace of God. And we know what we saw today in the baptismal waters, that the grace of God is good. And anytime we start talking about the grace of God, that's a present that He's given us. This is going to be good. Look at the grace of God, though, that He's talking about. We make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. Say what? You want to read that again, I promise you. Because as you read that and He's talking about the grace of God, He brings into mind some subjects that we don't usually like to lean upon. And that is in the midst of their suffering, in the midst of their poverty, in the midst of their persecution, in the midst of their despair and all the troubles and trials that they were going through. In the midst of all of that, the grace of God was there. And what was it there for? It was there to urge them to be sacrificial givers in the midst of all of that. You see, anytime you give with a right heart, with a right agenda, and that agenda is to glorify God, anytime you give of yourself in any situation, anytime you give in time, anytime you give in hope, anytime you're just that shoulder for somebody to lean on and you give, that's not of you. Because we're not wired that way. We're wired to be self-perpetuating agents of selfish satisfaction. That's how we're wired. To simply look out for me and my own needs and not worry about anybody else, not worry about the kingdom, not worry about the church, not worry about the people, not worry about anything but me. That's how, as a human being by nature, we are wired. And anything that takes us from that point of our nature to a point of time where we are giving generously, it's grace. because God is doing a work in you to show you the needs and to propel you to respond to those needs. It's grace. Macedonia had no reason that they should be sacrificing according to human standards in order to help the churches out that were around them. They were impoverished. Look at that again. As you read through this, you're looking at what generosity looks like, and it's the Macedonia. And this is the model that I'm bringing up to us today, because you first look at a model if you want to build yourself towards success. In this case, the model was tested through their deep poverty that they're going through their great trial of affliction. And as it was being tested through this, well, they showed that God's grace was sufficient. Verse 2 says that in great trial, that great trial means severe. Verse 2 says they were in deep poverty. That deep means extreme. And quite often in the life that we live, we hear this a lot. Matter of fact, we're probably guilty of saying this a lot. I sure would love to give. I just don't have the, you want to fill in the blank? Time. I would sure love to give. I just don't have the money. I would sure love to give. I just don't have the... And there's many words we could put in that blank. But the fact of the matter is, you want to see a model that's been tested and proven? Look at Macedonia. They didn't have the money. They were impoverished severely. They didn't have the time. They were being afflicted very largely. I forgot the word I used earlier. But you get the picture. They didn't have the resources that they should have had to be the giving church that they were. But they were the giving church that they were because they weren't relying upon their resources in order to be that. They were relying upon the one who has resources to make them that. And that is God. And that is why they're giving. And everything that you find here is under that umbrella of the grace of God. A follower of Christ, from the outflow of his life, should be a generous giver. Because it's not about your resources, it's about His. And as you follow Him, and He begins to change your outlook, you begin to go from that flesh-centered existence to a Spirit-led life. And yet, in the midst of this model of Macedonia, they had overflowing joy in the midst of their circumstances. They didn't gripe and complain about what they had given. They didn't think about, if only I had kept it, I'd be able to fix that shower stall. I'd be able to put in that sprinkler system. Man, can you imagine the investments that I could make in this economy that's starting to turn around? They didn't think about all that. They thought about the work of God that was being accomplished because of the giving that they had done. And through that, they had overflowing joy. How? Go back to verse 1. By grace. You want to be a generous giver? A lot of times you ask that question, and in church we give the church answer, oh yeah, I want to be the generous giver. And deep down we're going, I'm not sure. That's okay. That's okay to say, I'm not sure. Do you know why? Because you're admitting to the fact that you need something in your life in order to make you a generous giver. And that's a good place to be. And when you admit that you need something in your life, then you only have one alternative and one place to turn, and that's to God. And that's when you go, God, I really don't in my heart want to be a generous giver, but I know that's your way about things. So would you give me grace and make me that way? Oh, you've just put yourself in a place of position that God would delight you to be in. When you put yourself in that kind of position, He goes, you know what? I've told you that your kids know how to ask things from you and you know how to give things to them. I'm going to give you better gifts. That's one of the best gifts you can ever get, is to be a generous person in your life with your time, with your talents, with your monies, with everything. Because then you realize the hold of this world, it's insignificant compared to the grip of grace. And that's where Macedonia was, in the grip of grace. Grace can only be demonstrated when it's truly beyond your capabilities. It was being demonstrated in the church of Macedonia, and it can be demonstrated in me and in you as well. Most people would be going mad in the situation they're in. But in the situation they're in, it is the presence of Christ and His plan that is keeping them centered. They first looked and they said, God, what is your plan? Help these other churches. If you say so. And that's what kept them centered in the midst of the trials and afflictions and everything that they were going through. The harder the test is, the more evident the answer becomes. And that answer remains the same for us as it was for Macedonia. And that answer is Jesus. No matter how hard the test is and the trials that we walk through and the turmoil that we stand in the center of, when we truly cry out to God in our deficiency and say, God, we need you. We can't do it on our own. His grace begins to become centered on us. And that's when grace is realized in our need. Macedonia couldn't do this on their own. And neither can you and neither can I. It is a work of His grace to be a generous giver of all that we have for His kingdom. They were pleading with God to answer. Let me read this in context. Now that you see that story. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us. Do you know what that word imploring means? Pleading. Imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. They were begging to be used by God. They were crying out to be used by God. They were saying, God, in our poverty, in our affliction, we want to be used of you. Is there a perfect person in this room today? No. We all have feet of clay. That means that we're easily laid low. Is there a person in this room today that cannot be used of God? Every person in this room can be used of God in a mighty, great, and magnificent way. But oh, that we would begin pleading. That we would begin coming before God. Saying, God, you are God Almighty. You are wonderful Counselor. Let me know your ways. You are Prince of Peace. Give me that ease as I follow you. You are the King of Kings and there is no authority and power over you. Oh God, that you would use us in a way today with what we are. That we would plead with. See, Macedonia got it. They understood that without the grace of God, they would not be this model that we see here. They weren't doing it for that. They was doing it for His glory. But oh, the model that they set for it. The testing that came. And the success in Christ that they found, the deeper the need, the bigger the problem, the harder the test is, the more evident the answer. It's still Jesus. It's still Him. It will never be us. We are not the answer. He is. And they were so secure in the answer that in spite of what they had and what they did not have, they knew they would be used by Him. Why? Because they believed in the cause of Christ. I'm going to go ahead and close here today as I feel the Spirit leading me to. And the burning question that I have is, what do we believe in? What are we here for? What are the resources of each person in here, in the pew that you're sitting in, and in the carbon makeup that you occupy? What are you here for? Is it to be used of God? Or is it to maintain a mechanism? Is it to see souls saved? Or is it about religion? What are we here for?